Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This podcast is for Hukat, and if you're wondering what happened to Shalach or Korach, the answer is that due to vacation schedules, we've sent out three podcasts all at once. So the Shalach and Korach podcasts are available, but you may need to go to the right place in iTunes, look under the podcast library, and then under Pardes from Jerusalem podcast, so you can click the button to download the two other podcasts that were just sent out. Or look at the software that you use, if it's not iTunes, and you'll be able to download them. This podcast, as I mentioned, is for Hukat, and also I'm pleased to welcome a new commentator to the podcast series. Rabbi David Roth is a faculty member of Pardes, and he's delighted to share his thoughts on Hukat with you. And now, Rabbi Roth.
Our parasha, Parashat Hukat, contains the famous incident of Mei Meriva, the waters of contention, found in Bamidbar 20, verses 1 through 13. In this incident, the people of Israel attack Moses and Aaron about the lack of water. As we read, I would like to focus our attention on one specific root, which will play a key role in understanding the narrative, and which I will point out, Kahal, Kuf He Lamed. The Israelites arrived in a body at the wilderness of Tzin on the first new moon, and the people stayed at Kadesh. Miriam died there and was buried there. The community was without water, and they joined Vayikahalu against Moses and Aaron. The people quarreled, Vayarev, from the root Reev, with Moses, saying, "If only we had perished when our brothers perished at the instance of the Lord. Why have you brought the Lord's congregation, Kahal Hashem, into this wilderness for us and our beasts to die there? Why did you make us leave Egypt to bring us to this wretched place, a place with no grain, or figs, or vines, or pomegranates? There is not even water to drink." Moses and Aaron came away from the congregation, Mipnei HaKahal, to the entrance of the tent of meeting, and fell on their faces. I'd like to point out here that the phrase Mipnei HaKahal, away from the congregation, could be read to mean because of the congregation. Ibn Ezra comments on this verse, Kidmut Borchim, in the manner of fleeing. Perhaps they feared physical violence. The presence of the Lord appeared to them, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "You and your brother Aaron take the rod and assemble the community, Hakel et Haida, and before their very eyes order the rock to yield its water. Thus you shall produce water for them from the rock and provide drink for the congregation and for their beasts." Moses took the rod from before the Lord, as he had commanded him. Moses and Aaron assembled the congregation. Vayakhilu Moshe v'Aharon et ha-kahal in front of the rock, and he said to them, "Listen, you rebels, shall we get water for you out of this rock?" And Moses raised his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod. Out came copious water, and the community and the beasts drank. At this point, all is well. Problem solved. The only question that bothers me is Moses is calling the people of Israel rebels. That doesn't seem so nice. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not trust me enough to affirm my sanctity in the sight of the Israelite people, therefore you shall not lead this congregation into the land that I have given them. Those are the waters of Meribah, Mei Meribah, meaning that the Israelites quarreled with the Lord, through which he affirmed his sanctity." It didn't turn out so well in the end. Moses and Aaron seem to have lost everything in this event. They won't enter the land. Just to make things clear, their failure seems to be based in a lack of faith. "You did not trust me enough, lo he'emantem bi, to affirm my sanctity, lahakdisheni." If this story sounded familiar, that's because a strikingly similar incident takes place in Parashat B'Shalach, Shemot chapter 17. Perhaps our parasha can be better understood in comparison with the case of B'Shalach. From the wilderness of Sin, the whole Israelite community continued by stages, as the Lord would command. They encamped at Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. The people quarreled with Moses. This verb, vayarev, from the root riv, is the same one used in our parasha. They quarrel with Moses. Give us water to drink, they said. And Moses replied to them, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you try the Lord? But the people thirsted there for water, and the people grumbled against Moses and said, why did you bring us up from Egypt to kill us and our children and livestock with thirst? Here, as in our parasha, the people ask why Moses brought them from Egypt, only to let them die of thirst. Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, what shall I do with this people? Before long, they will be stoning me. Here, unlike our parasha, Moses complains to God about the people. While in our parasha, he and Aaron simply flee to the tabernacle. Then the Lord said to Moses, pass before the people, take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take along the rod with which he struck the Nile, and set out. I will be standing there before you on the rock at Horeb. Strike the rock, and water will issue from it, and the people will drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. The place was named Massah and Meribah, because the Israelites quarreled, and because they tried the Lord, saying, is the Lord present among us or not? In Parashat Beshalach, it seems that Moses did the right thing. He struck the rock as he was commanded, brought forth water, and solved the problem. In the sight of the elders of Israel, Le'enei Ziknei Yisrael. If we recall, in our parasha, Moses is commanded not to strike the rock, but to, before their very eyes, order the rock to yield their water. V'dibartem el hasela le'enehem, before their eyes. You shall speak to the rock before their eyes. Instead, something rather different took place before their eyes. One other point to note is that in Beshalach, the attack is more explicitly against God. Hayesh Hashem b'kirbenu im ayin. Is the Lord present among us or not? Finally, let's notice the absence of the root we've been following, kahal, which appeared constantly in our story of Chukat. It simply isn't here in Beshalach. Jacob Milgram, in his commentary to Bamidbar, argues that in our parasha, the people's complaint, if only we had perished when our brothers perished at the instance of the Lord, is an allusion to Korach's rebellion. Our brothers, he says, are the Korachites who perished during the rebellion. He then adds, although the people identify with the Korachite rebels, God does not punish them because their complaint is legitimate. They are dying of thirst. I would like to go further. The very emphasis on the root kahal in our parasha indicates a deep and fundamental connection between our incident and a problem within the people of Israel. Focusing on this root, we can look at our parasha and use it to find a deeper meaning. One thing to note is its use as a verb. The people of Israel joined against Moses and Aaron. Vayikahalu al Moshe ve'al Aharon. This verb form, of the type called binyan nif'al, does not appear very often in the Torah, and it's worth looking at these cases. The first case is the incident of the golden calf. When the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, the people gathered against Aaron, Vayikahel ha'am al Aharon, and said to him, come, make us a god who shall go before us. For that man, Moses, who brought us out from the land of Egypt, we do not know what has happened to him. The second case is the case of the Korachite rebellion. They combined against Moses and Aaron, Vayikahalu al Moshe ve'al Aharon, and said to them, you have gone too far, for all the community are holy, all of them, and the Lord is in our midst. Why then do you raise yourselves above the Lord's congregation? The third and final case is our incident in Parashat Chukat. The community was without water, and they joined against Moses and Aaron. Vayikahalu al Moshe v'al Aharon. It doesn't seem like this verb form is such a good sign. In fact, The Biblical Hebrew Lexicon of Brown, Driver, and Briggs gives three definitions for this root in this verb form: to assemble or to gather as a kahal, an assembly. The first is for conflict or war. The second is for rebellion. And the third is for religious purposes. In the Torah, as opposed to the rest of Tanakh, the second definition, rebellion, dominates, as we saw. I would also like to look at the use of this root as a noun, kahal, community, congregation, assembly. Here, I would especially like to focus on the form found in the people's complaint, kahal Hashem, the Lord's congregation. Let's look at this uncommon phrase in the three sections of the Torah in which it appears. The first is, once again, the Korachite rebellion. The rebels ask Moses and Aaron, "Why then do you raise yourselves above the Lord's congregation, kahal Hashem?" The second case is, again, our incident in Parashat Chukat. "Why have you brought the Lord's congregation, kahal Hashem, into this wilderness for us and our beasts to die there?" The third is a series of laws in Parashat Ki Tetzé, Devarim chapter 23, all coming in a similar phrase, "Lo yavo bikal Hashem," he shall not enter the Lord's assembly, including a prohibition on marriage. Among those whose entry is forbidden are a male whose sexual organs have been cut or crushed, "Lo yavo p'tzua daka uchrot shofcha bikal Hashem," a mamzer, the offspring of adultery or incest, "Lo yavo mamzer bikal Hashem," and an Ammonite or a Moabite, "Lo yavo amoni u'moavi bikal Hashem." On the other hand, Egyptians and Edomites may enter the congregation after the third generation. "Dor shelishi yavo lahem bikal Hashem." It seems that in the case of the Korachite rebellion, how can you be elevated above kahal Hashem, that is, above us? And in the case of our parasha, "Why have you brought the Lord's congregation, kahal Hashem, into this wilderness for us and our beasts to die there?" The word kahal Hashem represents privilege, a right to high standing or to protection. Jeffrey Teague, in his commentary to Devarim, argues that the kahal was more than simply a name for the congregation of Israel. He writes, "Hebrew kahal, literally gathering, sometimes refers to religious gatherings, but it is by no means limited to them as English congregation might suggest. Sometimes it is used in a broad sense, meaning simply all Israelites. But it also refers to the national governing assembly of the Israelites, that is, the entire people, or all the adult males, meeting in plenary session, and perhaps sometimes to their representatives acting as an executive committee. This assembly convenes to conduct public business such as war, crowning a king, adjudicating legal cases, distributing land, and worship. It is synonymous with Eidah, community, which likewise refers to the entire nation, to the adult males, especially those bearing arms, and perhaps to the tribal leaders acting as an executive on behalf of the nation. The fuller phrase, kahal Adonai, the assembly of the Lord, and kahal Am HaElohim, the assembly of God's people, function similarly. That is to say, to refer to oneself as a member of kahal Hashem might be asserting political power. "How can you treat me this way? I am a member of Congress." Kahal Hashem, then, has an element of human political power. The exclusion of certain groups from kahal Hashem, in addition to marriage prohibitions, was also an exclusion from political power. In later rabbinic understanding, an effort was made to minimize this exclusion. Returning to our parasha, Chukat, while the complainers refer to themselves as kahal Hashem, Moses and Aaron flee ha-kahal, the assembly, not the Lord's assembly. And in their punishment, God says that, quote, you shall not lead this congregation into the land that I have given them. HaKahal HaZeh, this congregation, and not Kahal Hashem. After their flight from the people, God tells Moses, you and your brother Aaron, take the rod and assemble the community. V'hakhel et ha'idah. And before their very eyes, order the rock to yield its water. Thus you shall produce water for them from the rock and provide drink for the congregation, ha'idah, and their beasts. Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he had commanded him. Moses and Aaron assembled the congregation, Vayakilu Moshe ve'aharon et ha'kahal, in front of the rock. So God seems to have provided a remedy for the situation, a gathering, not out of arrogance or privilege or the desire for power, but rather to be shown their connection to God. At this point, however, things take a turn for the worse. And he said to them, listen, you rebels, shall we get water for you from the rock? Milgram describes the word we, found in the first person verb notzi, shall we get, as, quote, the fatal pronoun by which Moses ascribes the miracle to himself and to Aaron. Indeed, for a group with delusions of grandeur and privilege, perhaps this taking of God's miracle and assigning it to a human being is precisely the opposite of what was needed. For those who think they are privileged to be Kahal Hashem, God's congregation, by right, that a human being can perform miracles can only exacerbate an already dangerous arrogance. I would like to conclude by considering what God actually commanded Moses to do, hakel, gather. Not the Nephil form of gathering together to rebel, but the hifil, for a third party, a leader, to gather the people together for a purpose. Two examples from Devarim illustrate the potential power of this command. In Parashat Va'etchanan, it says, the day you stood before the Lord your God at Horev, when the Lord said to me, quote, gather the people to me, that I may let them hear my words. Hakhel li et ha'am va'ashmi'im et devarai. In order that they may learn to revere me, as long as they live on earth, and may so teach their children. God commands to gather the people together so that God can make them hear God's words. In Parashat Vayelech, we have a similar notion. Gather the people, hakhel et ha'am, men, women, children, and the strangers in your communities, that they may hear and so learn to revere the Lord your God. Lema'an yishma'u ulema'an yilmadu v'yara'u et Hashem Elokechem, and to observe faithfully every word of this teaching. V'shamru la'asot et kol divrei ha'Torah hazot. This kind of gathering, at God's command, for the purpose of revering God, of learning God's words, and of observing the Torah, is very different than the gathering for the sake of human power. By taking a moment ripe with this possibility of teaching and turning it into a mere human miracle, Moses and Aaron missed out on a great opportunity. The gathering of the people together can be a great moment, and the key is to avoid turning it into yet another human power play. Returning to God's criticism of Moses and Aaron, God said, Lo he'emantem bi lahaktisheni. You have not believed in me, you have not trusted in me to sanctify me, le'enei b'nei Yisrael. This notion of gathering together to sanctify God before the people, that is the true ideal of gathering together. The notion of gathering together merely for the sake of power, for the sake of being a larger group, is a notion that is foreign to the parasha we've just read. In our parasha, and I would argue in the Torah, the whole notion of gathering together is the notion of gathering together lahaktisheni, to sanctify God and God's place in the world. To merely focus on the gathering, but without the actual purpose, we fall into the trap of the Korachites and into the trap of the complainers of our parasha. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi Roth. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send your emails to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.